KBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A new nomination for President-elect Trump today, announcing Warren Stevens as his choice to serve as the United States Ambassador to the United Kingdom. Stevens was a major Trump donor, giving millions of dollars to Trump's super PAC. Details about President Biden's decision to pardon his son, Hunter Biden, ahead of his sentencing this month on federal gun-related charges.
We know that the president had talked to his family about this potential pardon over the weekend. Senior staff was informed on Saturday night that there was a possibility that he would do this, and he made up his mind yesterday.
Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle denouncing the pardon. The Supreme Court heard oral arguments today on whether the FDA should continue to be able to ban certain flavored e-cigarettes. Conservative justices questioned whether vape makers had fair notice on FDA requirements, while liberals supported the agency's actions. Lake effect snow slamming the Great Lakes, seven states, Wisconsin to New York, under snow alerts today. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section at WGBW.FM. For 97.9 WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. Two Rivers police confirmed that the body of 7-year-old Jacob Bear was recovered from the West Wind River in Two Rivers just before noon Sunday. A missing endangered child alert was issued after 4:30 Saturday afternoon when Jacob, who is described as autistic, was playing outside and his parents lost sight of him. Several agencies searched for Jacob throughout the night. In a press release, Two Rivers police said, quote, "This tragic event is a reminder of how dangerous the ice can be on our waterways, especially this time of year when it's very thin." Jacob was a second grader at Koenig Elementary in Two Rivers. Gas prices plummeted nearly 13 cents a gallon in Green Bay over the last week. According to Gas Buddy, Green Bay prices are averaging $2.73 today. In Appleton, the average is $2.80, down over 8 cents from last week. Wisconsin's average price for a gallon of gas is also down over 8 cents to $2.77. Patrick DeHaan, the head of petroleum analysis at Gas Buddy, expects low prices to remain through the holiday shopping season. He added, potential impacts from tariffs will have no effect until late January, if at all. Last week, the Oshkosh Common Council voted to prohibit alcohol consumption in Opera House Square Park. Councilmember Carl Bulow was one of the dissenters.
Public urination, public defecation, and disorderly conduct are already illegal. From my understanding, we already have, you know, tickets for those. The alcohol use that predicates them, yes, makes them more likely, but now we're getting into a place where I don't think serves our population, especially the unhoused population.
The ban will only be in effect through March of 2025. The council voted 4-3 to approve the ordinance. I'm Lisa Hale, 97.9 WGBW News. For news anytime, log on to WGBW.FM.
The Bucks to play the Pistons. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks getting ready to host the Detroit Pistons tomorrow night. The Bucks now with a winning record of 10-9 after beating the Wizards over the weekend, 124-114. The Bucks have won six games in a row. Women's college volleyball tournament's getting underway later this week at the UW Fieldhouse in Madison. The Wisconsin women's team playing Thursday night around 7 against Fairfield in the first round. Marquette learned their women's team will face Florida Gulf Coast in Salt Lake City, Utah this Thursday at 5:30. NFL. Packers defensive back Jair Alexander back on the practice field after missing the past couple of games with a torn PCL in his right knee. Wide receiver Romeo Doubs still in the concussion protocol. Tight end Tucker Kraft on facing the lines Thursday night inside Ford Field in Detroit.
You know, Ford Field gets loud. Big rectangle that place is. And then, that's a place where the atmosphere thrives.
That's the Packers' Tucker Kraft with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy, maybe a flurry tonight. Lows upper teens to 20. For tomorrow, mainly cloudy. A high around 30. Some flurries and snow showers possible Wednesday. High in the mid-30s and becoming windy. Colder Thursday before warming through the weekend. Right now it's 33.
This Giving Tuesday, Civic Media invites you to make a difference. Help a neighbor, volunteer with a local organization, or support a Wisconsin nonprofit with a donation.
Giving back starts right here in your community. Learn how you can make an impact today. Visit civicmedia.us. Civic Media, proud to support Giving Tuesday and the spirit of giving throughout Wisconsin.
Hey, it's John Mino.
And Jim Schmidt from Mino and the Mayor.
Want to stay in the loop with all things Northeast Wisconsin? Sign up for the WGBW weekly newsletter.
Get the latest local stories, updates on the weather, and a special feature from our Mino and the Mayor podcast.
It's your one-stop shop for real news and great conversations in Northeast Wisconsin.
Log on to WGBW.fm today and get signed up.
Real news, great conversations. Sign up today at WGBW.fm/newsletter. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as Luke Mathers joins us for some Tuesday Tangents with Luke and also a What's Worse? Be here.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Todd Albaugh Show.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app. This is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
Hey, welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for listening. You can be a part of this fine production, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC, just PS on the board, and jazzed as hell to bring back to you a favorite of ours, my favorite FDR Democrat, Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, welcome back, man.
It's a pleasure to be back on this Monday.
I know we got a lot of things to get to, Harvey. You know, how dreary things are looking these days, and of course, here in the state of Wisconsin, a Dane County judge has overturned Act 10, ruling it unconstitutional. We'll get there as well. But Harvey, I want to get your sense in and kind of bring this conversation from the last hour, continue it just for a little bit. Harvey, the pardoning of Hunter Biden by President Joe Biden, specifically after he said he wasn't going to do it, Harvey, democracy cannot thrive, cannot exist without law and order. What was your impression of this pardon, Harvey?
Well, first of all, I wasn't surprised because politicians who have relatives are politicians who have relatives. And let's not forget, wasn't it Jimmy Carter who pardoned
Billy Beer?
Right. I think the bigger immoral act is going to be and has been when Trump pardons all those people who aren't his relatives. How's that?
Okay. Right. All the January 6th. Now Trump's going to
I mean, in principle, I'm one would have hoped that he wouldn't, do that. But Biden's not one who Biden's never had problems changing his mind.
Sure.
Okay. I mean, 40 years, he was a neoliberal. And then all of a sudden people were celebrating him as potentially the next FDR. And though he'd never achieved quite that, he obviously did a lot more than many of us expected him to achieve when it came to economic matters and empowering working people, etc. But it's still the case that it just didn't surprise me. I mean, the degree to which people will go to certain lengths to defend family. But on the other hand, he still is president. So yeah, I'm in political terms, I'm a little torn by it. In constitutional terms, I'm torn by it. But maybe it's the case that we ought to be rethinking all this pardon stuff, given especially what's going to be happening over the years to come.
Mm-hmm. And we can look at, and maybe we'll later on in the show, Harvey, get to what some of Trump's pardons from the last time on the way out the door that he did.
Yes.
We got a couple of callers, Harvey, if you don't mind, let's just clear the board, talk about the pardoning. Joe from Madison, welcome. What do you got for us?
I would throw into the mix here for you and Harvey that there's this article from The Guardian back in late October, I think it was October 24, and the title of it is Trump's Final Pitch to Voters, Retribution Vows. And within it, they talk about the fact that Trump was quite clear when he was on the campaign trail that he would consider using the military to go after political opponents. And the National Public Radio tallied more than 100 threats to investigate, prosecute, imprison, or otherwise punish his perceived opponents from Trump in the last 2 years. he's just started. I mean, when, once this guy gets in with Patel in there, who is going to be J. Edgar Hoover part two, and with a supine Supreme Court, or at least his real good friends in the Supreme Court, I think that, that President Biden rightly perceived, my God, what's going to happen to my kid? I think that he was right. And I would say that the next question is, my God, what about the other political opponents, such as Liz Cheney, such as Joe Biden, such as, I mean, he's just started. And I think what we're seeing, to my mind, is not a discussion about where law is going, but where is our country going once this guy gets in and his Justice Department is just, it goes after his opponents in retribution, not for justice, but for retribution. Your thoughts, I'd love to hear them. Thanks very much, you guys.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. Go ahead, Harvey.
Everything you just said, I agree with your concern on every single one of those. And frankly, there are, you know, certain things that we really need to be doing. The first one is the Democrats need to get their act together, at least regarding the question of democracy. OK, that's absolutely imperative. They can debate all they want about the direction the party ought to go. And I have my own ideas, and I'm sure I hope we'll take that up sometime, Dom. But really, it clearly is the case that the Democrats need to get together, at least to show solidarity, so that the people out here like you, me, Dom, and others will know that there are people in Washington who are prepared to seriously oppose and take serious action if necessary. The second thing is, it's striking the degree to which we may well have to rely on state politics quite often to respond to these things. And last but not least, if you do not already belong to an organization that has a commitment to solidarity for all of its members, whether it's churches or especially in the case of those of us who have been members of labor unions or could be members of labor unions, do that, because solidarity is going to be the only answer to, not necessarily if you have the money to hire a lawyer. I mean, I think that's all well and good. The more important question is solidarity with your neighbors and others on this, and especially on the community level, workplace level, etc.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. We'll talk about the unions. Act 10 overturned by a district county judge today. But let's squeeze L.A. Tom in while we got a moment. Tom, welcome. Happy Monday. What do you got for us?
Happy Monday. Hey, Harvey.
Hey.
All right. Regressive Republicans are very good at narrative, and the rest of their echo chamber and media infrastructure can tell a story over and over and over again, telling the same story. Democrats need a narrative, and they need to keep it simple, and they have a playbook to follow already. They need to start off and tell it as a narrative. There was a gentleman by the name of Franklin Delano Roosevelt who was a president who was elected four different times. In fact, progressives and regressives both loved him. We need to communicate what FDR did for us in the New Deal, including Social Security, et cetera, and then talk about how he wasn't able to fulfill his second economic bill of rights. And that's what, whatever the politician is, that's what I'm doing as a Democrat, is to fulfill what wasn't done because of FDR's death. He believed in high taxes on the morbidly rich, in today's words, the economic royalists, the billionaire class. We need to discuss the difference between public and private and the commons. And Harvey, I just want to get your thoughts, because I'll tell you what, one thing Bernie did not do, Bernie did not tie himself to FDR. He got too caught up in the word socialist. Whoever it is that comes into our party next better start saying, I am an FDR Democrat and I am a proud FDR Democrat. And if you don't know what FDR is or who he was, then get out your damn history book and start reading.
And Google it, says Tom. Tom,
hey,
thank
better
you.
Than that, Tom. Not just any history book. Pick up The Fight for the Four Freedoms, What Made FDR and the Greatest Generation Truly Great. By the way, I'm the author.
A truly great author. Harvey, the term FDR Democrat, we've been using that here as of late. Do you think that can resonate?
Well, I mean, for a long time, it did resonate. I mean, it resonated all the way into the early 1970s. Since the 1970s, it's not just the Republicans who've gone out of their way to hijack history and pervert the past, in essence, but it's also been the Democrats who have turned their back on that tradition. And similarly, you know, when I was back when I was in my teen years, I'm pretty sure that when I turned on conventions, political conventions, Democratic Party conventions, they used to take pride in their forebears. They used, seriously, whether it was Thomas Jefferson, but most especially Franklin Roosevelt, even Harry Truman, JFK. I mean, I don't feel as warmly towards everyone as I do towards FDR, but they did. And it, and I think Tom's right. The Democrats need to start laying hold of that story and reminding people of what was entailed in that story. What not just FDR produced, but what a whole generation produced between the 1930s and the 1960s. That, I think that's imperative. Remind people of two things. Remind people, one, of what is possible when working people join together in support of a politician they've come to trust. And second, that it's imperative that people understand it's not just a matter of voting for the candidate who promises to fight for you, but vote for the candidate, if they're a Democrat or progressive, who inspires the fight in you. Because as Bernie said when he was running, despite his failures to make much more of FDR, as he said, when asked, well, what are you going to do if Congress or the courts don't back your initiatives? He said, well, that's when the American people have to step forward. It's not just me, it's us. And then he coined the hashtag, not me, us.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy, University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, talking about community, talking about labor unions. Well, here we go. Act 10 overturned by a Dane County judge. You know, the Republicans are going to love that. And according to the reporting here, Harvey, the lawsuit focused or argued that the 2011 law, it violated equal protection guarantees in the Constitution by dividing public employees into two classes, one being general and the other being the new one, public safety. And of course, the public safety were exempt from the collective bargaining limitations. The judge said he couldn't, you know, deal with this piece with that in there. Couldn't just throw it out and have the law stand. So now we'll see what happens. It goes, presumably, it'll be appealed and perhaps ends up in front of Wisconsin's now liberal Supreme Court. Harvey, we got 2 minutes left in this segment. What's your response, and how do you think this will impact public labor unions, at least in the short run?
I can tell you that the union I have belonged to, the American Federation of Teachers here in the state of Wisconsin, Wisconsin AFT, is revving up right now to organize and organize and organize, because undeniably there are obstructions over forthcoming, possibly. One is a Supreme Court election coming up this spring that could change the composition of the court again. And of course, ultimately, no matter who gets elected to the court this time, the question of how the court as a body responds to this, the challenge that will inevitably come from the right. Voss and others have already promised. Okay. But I think it's important that my union, the NDA, and other unions do everything they can. One last thing. When they included only police and firefighters in the category, they exempted other police law enforcement officers. They exempted Capitol Police and they exempted university police, you know, campus police. I mean, you know, they were so quick to succeed that they probably, you know,
they made unconstitutional law because they were so quick to try to jam it through, violate equal protection guarantees in the Constitution. But I guess depends on the judge, depends on the court, Harvey. You know, people have different interpretations of what is and is not unconstitutional. Folks, you're listening.
When we come back after the break, I can tell you what that decision today led me to be thinking about. Back in 2000, I remembered the 2011 experience. I'd like to recall that.
All right. Harvey K., come back with us, 855-752-4842. More on Wisconsin's Act 10.
From De Pere to Suamico, 97.9 WGBW.
You're an organ donor, right? Here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. which is why when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. As Democrats pick up the pieces from their loss to Donald Trump, one of the first major decisions the party will be making is to select its new chair. The race for that role might just have a major Wisconsin connection. Ben Wickler, the chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, is a potential candidate for chair of the DNC. A source close to Wickler said he is seriously considering running. One Democratic source characterized Wickler as a Goldilocks candidate for the position. He's liked by both centrists and progressives, big-dollar donors and grassroots organizers, and knows how important state parties around the country can be in a second Trump term. So, could he be just right for the role? The vote for DNC chair is scheduled for February 13th. A lot can happen between now and then, but this story will certainly be one to watch for Democratic politics in the state of Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matinee on Air.
And welcome back to the Dom Selby Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, sticking around for this segment. Harvey, we're talking about the Act 10 overturned by a Dane County judge. You had some thoughts, you had some memories you want to share. Please do, Harvey.
Yeah, I mean, when I got a text from my friend John Shelton, who's the vice president of the AFT in the state, telling me of the judge's decision, I mean, I was close not to crying, but I welled up a little bit because I remembered so well the night that my wife and I went down and spent to the state capitol marching around and then going into the capitol. First of all, I think it's important for everyone to know that this was the state that in 1959 first granted public employees the right to organize and bargain collectively. We were the history-making state, and it was astonishing to my mind that here was 50 years later, 51 years later, 52 years later if you count to 2011, in which Republicans were stripping working people of their rights in this state. And that was truly, in the grand course of history, that was a criminal act, really, okay? And they shoved it through in a late-night thing. They knew that if there was a public debate about all this, they would definitely not have their way. But they got their way. Now, when we went down, and the marches had already begun over several weekends, my numbers may be off, but I went down with the spirit of, look, I'm a union member. I've got to be down there at least for some time to express my anger and yet at the same time my hopes that we could save our collective bargaining rights. Well, first of all, I was amazed. I mean, it was cold down there in Madison. It was cold all across the state. It was cold. And people were marching around very peacefully. And also what amazed me is the degree to which you felt a certain sympathy on the part of the police who were supervising it all of that. And then when you got into the Capitol, if you opted to go in, I mean, it was not just masses of people, but I could not believe how clean everything was. I mean, it was in many ways sort of so Wisconsin. It was clean. It was orderly. Everybody was nice. Everyone was having a good, spirited time. Okay. This is what democracy looks like. And at a certain point, I did tear up on occasion that night. I could not believe just how much the feeling of solidarity prevailed. And I was a columnist at the time with occasional columnist for the Huffington Post. And I wrote a piece about it, and I said to people, this was a night in which one had to feel proud to be a Wisconsinite, not because of the state legislature, God forbid, okay, but because of the state's citizens and how we turned out. And by the way, that place remained clean, completely in contrast, should any MAGA type bring it up, to what transpired that day on January 6th, you know, in which people stormed the Capitol and were prepared to kill and maim and kill people. And this was a totally different experience. So, you know, I was Wisconsin proud then, and now I'm hoping I can be truly again Wisconsin proud. And don't forget, later the Republicans turned around and turned us into a right-to-work state, even for private sector employees. So we have a lot to take back. You know, I used to say take back America. Well, I say take back Wisconsin.
Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy, University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. A little bit from the reporting, as mentioned, the lawsuit here claimed that the law violated equal protection guarantees. The judge, Frost, agreed. And here's what he said. I cannot solve Act 10's constitutional problems by striking the definition of, quote, public safety employee, leaving the term undefined, and leaving the remainder of the law in place. He added that Act 10, as written by the legislature, specifically and narrowly defines public safety employee. It is that definition which is unconstitutional. The legislature cites no precedent for this bold argument that should simply strike the unlawful definition and leave it to an agency and the courts to later define as they see fit. I am unaware of any such precedent. Interpreting public safety employee after striking the legislative definition would be an exercise in the absurd. Of course, Scott Walker had something to say about it, Harvey. He called it brazen political activism. Quote, this makes the April 2025 Wisconsin Supreme Court race that much more important. We want a state where legislators and the governor make the laws, not the courts, question mark. Also,
hey, wait, is that the Scott Walker who conned us with Foxconn? Wait a minute, is that
guy? I think it's that same guy. Yeah,
that guy.
That one.
He goes on in a second tweet. Collective bargaining is not a right; it's an expensive entitlement.
I'm sorry.
No,
outrageous.
Yeah, I know.
When he took the. By the way, it wasn't like it was just they took away our collective bargaining rights. I mean, that was criminal enough. They actually took away parts of our income. Okay. I mean, I lost 10% of my income every year because he decided that my pension shouldn't be as good as it was and that he was going to take the money and make a gift in his mind to the citizens of Wisconsin and never mentioned, by the way, I'm giving you some money because I've just taken it out of the pockets of teachers and professors and basically the folks who serve you in the public realm.
But not the cops, which, of course, comes to the equal protection.
Well, not some of the cops.
Some of the cops they did. West Dems, Harvey, for our last statement here. Ben Wickler issued a statement today. Today's ruling marks an important victory for working people in Wisconsin and affirms what's long been clear. Scott Walker's attack on public employees was not just a national disgrace. It was unconstitutional. With this decision, working families will once again have the right to organize, a right stripped away by Scott Walker's divide-and-conquer strategy that pitted working Wisconsinites against each other to the benefit of wealthy special interests. And Harvey...
That's well said. The best thing I've ever heard him say. Well said.
And you think the unions are acting right now? They're getting on the horse and they're getting ready to organize?
I know my union is. I know my union was active, I believe, in that particular lawsuit that the judge decided on.
So that's great news. We have some good news, right?
Exactly. I sent you earlier when you said, can I make it out? I said, I don't know. Things were looking pretty bleak. You know, it was cold. It was gray. It was like a November day. Not even a December is usually cold. But it's usually get some sunshine in there. But this was like a November day, which we've had enough of those.
We'll take any sunshine we can get. And you are a ray of sunshine. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, always love it when you make time for me on the Mondays, man. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hope to see you again soon.
All right, folks, this is the Dom Salve Show. You can join 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Stick around. Thanks, Harvey.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
For 97.9 WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers will begin a two-week tour of the state to hold listening sessions on the biennial budget. Today, he's in Appleton. He will have additional stops in other parts of the state. A number of public officials have already stated their budget priorities, including what to do with the state's massive surplus. Republicans want to use the money to offer tax relief, while Democrats want to put the funds to use for public education and child care, among other things. It's Cyber Monday, and Wisconsin's Better Business Bureau warns you to be wary when shopping online. Watch out for false advertising and phony websites. Shop with trustworthy sellers on secure sites only. Keep your antivirus software up to date, price check before you buy, and take advantage of rewards and loyalty programs, and use your credit card. Understand return policies and watch out for phishing scams as well. You can always look for the BBB seal to shop with confidence. You can report online scams and find out more at bbb.org. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services is reporting stronger vaccination numbers as peak season for respiratory viruses arrives. According to DHS officials, slightly more Wisconsin residents have been vaccinated for the flu and COVID this year. The overall increase may not be much, but it is a positive development after seeing a decrease in vaccination rates across the state in recent years. Health officials are advising more residents to get their vaccinations as outbreaks of COVID and the flu begin to pop up across the state. The Oshkosh Celebration of Lights kicked off its 23rd season Friday, bringing the joy and lights of the holiday season to the EAA grounds. See our story at WGBW.fm for information and photos from this year's display. I'm Lisa Hale, 97.9 WGBW News. For news anytime, log on to WGBW.fm.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Well, Glickin' Weekend's box office haul turned out to be no match for that of Barbenheimer's, but it was still impressive and helped the holiday box office get off to a great start. As expected, Wicked landed in the top spot with a take of $114 million, more than doubling Gladiator 2's haul of $56 million at the gate. Gladiator 2, directed by Ridley Scott and starring Paul Mescal, Connie Nielsen, Denzel Washington, and Pedro Pascal, was never expected to be the top dog, as it was always Oppenheimer to Wicked's Barbie. Wicked slightly exceeded expectations with its box office haul, whereas Gladiator 2 came in just under its expectations. This is becoming a trend in Hollywood where two films coming out at the same time were not necessarily competing against each other, but help each other create a social media phenomenon. Landing in third place in week two of its release was Red One with $13 million. Rounding out the top five were Bonhoeffer, Pastor Spy Assassin, and the resilient Venom The Last Dance, which came in fifth place with $4 million. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy, maybe a flurry tonight. Lows upper teens to 20. For tomorrow, mainly cloudy, a high around 30. Some flurries and snow showers possible Wednesday, high in the mid-30s and becoming windy. Colder Thursday, before warming through the weekend. Right now it's 33.
Hi, I'm Michael Friedman, CEO of Simple Life Hospitality. Let us take the hassle out of vacation rental property management. We'll maximize your earnings and handle every detail from cleaning to maintenance and repairs. For guests, enjoy a stay that feels like home with hand-selected properties, personal touches like local recommendations, and extras like concierge service that will make your trip unforgettable. Whether you're a homeowner or a traveler, experience the Simple Life. Visit SimpleLifeRentals.com.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
His name's Jeff Mandel, general counsel for Law Forward.
Mr. Gableman broke more ethics laws and rules than he followed. The attorney's oath here in Wisconsin is fairly long. Mr. Gableman had, in the course of the sham investigation into the 2020 election, violated every single sentence in that oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Maggie Dawn.
Next, we discuss how the heck do we evaluate if the Donald Trump 2.0 presidency is a success? I'd like to hear from you, MAGA voters. Tune in.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
Please call the doctor, I just saw a piece of me die. Can't stop the darkness is all that I know.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. It's a text line. It's a phone line. You can be a part. I want to thank our most recent guest, Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. He's a cool cat. He usually comes around on Mondays. I love it. Harvey reaches out and sends me, you know, hey, Act 10. Oh, it's very bleak.
Stuff happening.
You want to talk about it, Harvey? Yeah. Harvey's a good cat, and I certainly appreciate you know, and I know I make fun of my our older friends, you know, but Harvey's been around, man, and he knows his stuff, and I really appreciate his perspective, especially his the influence from FDR, and I know a lot of our listeners are big FDR fans. FDR Democrats. I would be. I'm gonna be an FDR Democrat. I like that
you
idea.
You can be an FDR Democrat.
I'm gonna take that. I'm gonna be that now.
All right. Once an independent, now an FDR Democrat.
Today. Maybe I'll change my mind like Biden did. All right. So
we're back on this.
Just a little bit.
Okay.
And if you have some thoughts on it, maybe we'll stick on this topic for just a few more minutes. 855-752-4842. And I want to do a little compare and contrast. Dug this one up from NPR, December 23rd of 2020.
Okay.
Trump on his way out the door.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He had a whole string of pardons.
Oh, he certainly did. According to the reporting from way back when, Trump issued dozens more pardons on Wednesday evening to many wealthy and well-connected convicts with ties to his innermost circles, including former campaign chairman Paul Manafort, Republican operative Roger Stone, and Charles Kushner, the father-in-law of Ivanka Trump. But you can call him Mr. Ambassador to France. From now on. In total, Trump pardoned 26 people and commuted the sentences of three more people. The second consecutive night of what is expected to be a flurry of acts of clemency before he leaves office. Well, yeah. I think they're cashing those checks. Let's talk briefly. Manafort, Stone, and Mr. Kushner, if we may.
Absolutely.
I think there's some meat on the bone here. Paul Manafort. Now, this was his campaign manager. According to NPR here, Manafort, who was sentenced to more than 7 years in prison. 7 years in prison after being convicted of bank and tax fraud, in addition to other crimes, was released in May from a minimum security federal lockup and moved to home confinement over concerns about the coronavirus. Here's what the White House press secretary said at the time. As a result of blatant prosecutorial overreach, Mr. Manafort has endured years of unfair treatment and is one of the most prominent victims of what has been revealed to be perhaps the greatest witch hunt in American history.
There seem to have been a lot of those.
I mean, when you put it like that, it sounds really bad. Shortly after the announcement, Manafort expressed his gratitude on Twitter back then. Mr. President, my family and I humbly thank you for the presidential pardon you bestowed upon me. Words cannot fully convey how grateful we are. Now, what did he do? Well, Manafort spent his career as a high-level power broker. I want to be a high-level power broker.
You want to be a lot of things right now.
And advocate for some of the most infamous clients in the world, including dictators like Ferdinand Marcos and Motubu Sese Seko. In the 2000s, Manafort connected with Viktor Yanukovych, a Russian-friendly strongman who served as president of Ukraine. Remember that? Okay. So Yanukovych was a president of Ukraine until he was thrown out of power in a popular revolt. Now, Manafort made millions of dollars while working for Yanukovych, but his work in Ukraine set the stage for Manafort's eventual prosecution and his imprisonment. Manafort and his protege, Rick Gates, remember him, hid from authorities the money they earned in Ukraine and came to the attention of U.S. investigators before the two went to work in 2016 for the then candidate, Donald Trump. So these cats were stashing millions of dollars, and they were working with Viktor Yanukovych, who was a Russian-friendly strongman. So the billionaires were basically paying Manafort. Russian billionaires were paying Manafort.
Correct.
That's how, and then he took that money, and did he do the right thing and pay his taxes? Well, no, he didn't. No, hell no, no. I don't have to pay taxes. Little people pay taxes. So he got busted 7 years, and Donald Trump, well, he gave him a pardon. Another star here, Kushner, Charles Kushner, the father of Jared. Jared wasn't hatched. The father of Jared, who serves as a senior advisor to the president and is married to Ivanka. Again, this is back from 2020. Now, Charles Kushner is a real estate billionaire. Now, he served 2 years in prison for tax evasion and retaliating against a federal witness who happened to be his brother-in-law. Now, if you folks don't know this story, this is one of my favorites, so bear with me. You can join me as well, 855-752-4842. So Charles Kushner, Jared's father, is a billionaire, did 2 years for tax evasion and retaliating against a federal witness. Here's the background. After making a fortune in New Jersey, the developer came under investigation in 2003 by then U.S. Attorney Chris Christie for making illegal campaign contributions.
Hmm.
I mean, when you're a billionaire, you can
do anything.
You can do it. Grab by the Now, Charles Kushner's brother-in-law and former employee, his name William Shoulder, eventually became a witness for federal prosecutors. In a move to exact revenge on his brother-in-law for the betrayal, Kushner devised a bizarre blackmail plot.
Oh, good.
He hired a prostitute to sleep with his brother-in-law, secretly videotaped the encounter, and then mailed the tape of it to his own sister.
That's messed up.
Yeah, man, come on.
That's messed up.
It's just like 80s dynasty or some stuff, man. But the move backfired. Shoulder and his wife turned the tape over to prosecutors. Now, Chris Christie, remember, he was in Trump's orbit for a minute back in 2016. And then he was out.
And then he was booted out.
I mean, he prosecuted Jared's dad. And you don't do that to Jared's dad.
You can't do that.
At the time, Christie said the case was, quote, one of the most loathsome, disgusting crimes he's ever prosecuted.
Well.
Now, in the end, Kushner pleaded guilty to 16 counts of tax evasion, one count of retaliating against a federal witness, and another count of lying to the Federal Election Commission. And then back then, on Wednesday, this is back in 2020, the White House cited Kushner's philanthropy as one of the reasons for Trump's pardon. Quote, since completing his sentence in 2006, Mr. Kushner has been devoted to important philanthropic organizations and causes such as this and that, yada, 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 so on and so forth. This record of reform and charity overshadows Kushner's convictions and 2-year sentence for preparing false tax returns, witness retaliation, and making false statements to the FEC, according to Trump.
According to Trump.
According
that's
to
a,
Trump.
When that's he, a pretty big disclaimer right there.
Yeah. He's totally fine. He donated some money, so he's good. You know, he's a billionaire. I mean, come on. He set up your brother-in-law with a hooker as a total honeypot? I mean, how Russian is that? All right, and then one more, talking about pardons here from back in 2020, Roger Stone.
Oh, boy, okay.
Now, the case against Roger Stone was brought by then-special counsel Robert Mueller as part of his probe into Russia's interference in the 2016 election and possible ties between Moscow and the Trump campaign. Mm-hmm. Now, Stone was indicted on charges of lying to Congress about what he and then-candidate Trump knew about Russian efforts to discredit Hillary Clinton in the 2016 campaign, witness tampering, and obstruction. The charges related to his efforts during the 2016 presidential race to act as an intermediary between the Trump campaign and WikiLeaks. Oh, yeah, Trump was Stone was involved there. But days before Stone, who was Trump's longtime friend and political confidant, was to report to prison in July, the president commuted his 40-month prison sentence. What was he doing? Well, he was lying about the Russian efforts to discredit Hillary Clinton's campaign and acting as an intermediary with the WikiLeaks, who, of course, hacked. Hey, Russia, if you're listening, if you find those emails, people in the press really like it. And then that happened. But no, nothing to see here. Nothing to see here. And there's more to it, but you get the gist. So those were a few of the pardons from Donald Trump. Now, Roger Stone, mind you, if you look at some of the, and there's obviously tons of video from January 6th, the insurrection, the riot, the love fest gone wrong. Roger
not
Stone.
Not gone wrong, according to Trump.
Roger Stone.
Everything was perfect.
So perfect. There's love in the air. Go home. We love you. It's very special. Roger Stone was palling around, and he had bodyguards were who? I believe they were the Proud Boys.
Oh, yeah. They were.
Yeah.
They were.
So, and some of those Proud Boys were convicted of seditious conspiracy. And as my concerns I've relayed to all of you often is that basically, as is mentioned here, Roger Stone is a buddy of Donald Trump's.
Mm-hmm.
And he was palling around with, you know, folks convicted of seditious conspiracy. Mm-hmm. So I just wonder, like, were there conversations? What were the phone texts, the lines, the connections? How was it done? I would imagine there's some questions to be answered. But now, because all you folks voted for Donald Trump, there's nothing to see here. You just allowed it to happen. So I blame all you Trump voters for that. We'll never know if Donald Trump, at least not right now, maybe someday it'll be some leak out of the FBI or someone will grab a file somewhere that shows the call log records from, I don't know, say the Proud Boys to Roger Stone or Roger Stone to Trump himself directly, or maybe one of Trump's sycophants, you know, to relay some information about how it's going to be wild on January 6th. And then, you know, some of those folks arrested and convicted of seditious conspiracy doing 20 plus years. I just want to make sure you guys remember that, because it's not trespassing. It's not the real estate agent getting caught up in all the action. Seditious conspiracy. Those guys were bodyguarding Roger Stone, who Trump pardoned. Pardoned and got him away from doing what? From a 40-month sentence. Mm-hmm. So, there are some pardons. There's some discussions to be had around pardons. I just, if we're going to have them, there's a couple from your guy.
Yeah, let's dig into it from both sides, shall we?
We're to both sides.
We're in both sides.
Everybody does it. Wisco Paul, what's up, man? Happy Monday. What do you got for us?
Thanks for taking my call, Dom. You and the young lady are doing an awesome job together.
Thank you, buddy.
I would like to make this, I'll just make a quick point. The Republicans should sit down and be quiet, because they just elected a president that is guilty of multiple felonies and is liable for rape. And I don't think I have to say anything more than that. Great show.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, everyone's very concerned about the Hunter Biden pardon. Oh, my God, he was smoking crack and bought a gun and didn't pay his taxes. And these guys are like, where'd you get the crack? Because these guys got guns and lots of Republicans don't pay their taxes. Hell, the new ambassador to France did some time for not paying his taxes, and he was a billionaire.
I think that we should be having this conversation about, should Biden have pardoned his son? And let's remember that, 49% of people voted for a convicted felon, voted for a man who was found liable for rape, and we're fine with this. Yeah, let's have a conversation about pardoning and whether it was the right thing to do, whether it was the right time to do it. And many things can be true at once. We can hold on to multiple things.
We can. We're adults.
We're adults.
CJ, you are up. Welcome, CJ, our conservative love muffin. What do you got for us, man?
Well, thanks for taking my call, Dom. You and Jen selectively picked what this deal was about, actually, is the Biden family took $25+ million that they know of, and from China, Ukraine, and Russia.
Yeah, that sounds illegal.
That's the fact.
Yeah.
You remember? And here's the thing, they got a bank record for it. And the funny thing is that you and your party have been so gullible to believe Biden. You're shocked that he did this. I said it months ago to you and Crudy. And you laugh, and you know, Cash Patel.
Yeah, I mean, I got a problem with my politicians lying to me, CJ. I mean, do you have a problem with Donald Trump telling you that he's going to build the wall and Mexico's going to pay for it?
Well, here we go. Another piece of deflection.
It's not deflection, man. It's about a politician lying to you. No, here, I'm going to tell you what it's about, CJ. It's about politicians standing up and saying a bunch of BS, feeding it to us, and then not following through with it. And if you got a problem with the pardon, my only problem with the pardon is that Joe Biden said he wasn't going to do it, and he did it. Your guy said Mexico's going to pay for the wall, and they didn't, and they won't again. 855-752-4842. Come back. One last segment.
From Hobart to Bay Settlement, 97.9 WGBW.
The Todd Alba Show.
Cash Patel, who Trump has nominated to be the head of the FBI, saying he wants to basically shut down the main parts of the FBI. Bill Barr, MAGA Republican Attorney General to Donald Trump. Quote, the very idea of moving Patel into a role like this showed a shocking detachment from reality. Unquote. This is not the left calling out Patel. This is the right.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
We know what happened the last time Trump applied this ham-fisted tariff policy. He had to write a $12 billion check to farmers because he crushed so many of our agricultural exports and drove up the cost of single-family homes because the cost of lumber from places like Canada went way the frick up. Everything got more expensive.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free. Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIX. A lot of texters have comments about CJ, but we're not going to read them on here. Wait, what was the one about boiled egg and house insulation?
Thanks, Cam, for that. Thanks, Cam.
The cabinet. Let's talk a little bit about the cabinet. There's a lot to get to. We're going to have to maybe carry this over into tomorrow's
definitely
conversation. But found this one at the Daily Beast, and Pete Hegseth. The foxy guy. His mom, not a big fan of Pete, apparently.
Not according to a letter that she wrote.
Which she apparently did retract. Once it came out. According to the Daily Beast, Hegseth's mother trashed his character in a blistering email shortly after his contentious divorce from his second wife, Samantha, the mother of his three children. Oh, they get me divorced and baby mamas. And I mean, it sounds very Trumpy. Penelope Hegseth, 70, wrote that President-elect Donald Trump's pick for defense secretary had been mistreating women for years, which puts him on the top of the list for Donald
Trump.
Well,
that's a requirement, isn't it?
I think in order to be nominated.
Yeah. You need to have a history of abuse, scandal, and breaking every ethics guideline possible.
And someone in your family has got to throw you into the bus.
Someone needs to.
In this case, it's mom.
It's mom.
No, I get it. You know, divorces can be ugly.
They can be messy.
Yeah,
sure,
your families, whatever, all that. But come on,
this
Ma.
This is a scathing letter.
Damn, Ma.
Yeah.
You know? Here's what Ma said to Hegseth. Penelope, on behalf of all the women, and I know it's many, you have abused in some way, I say, get some help and take an honest look at yourself. Penelope wrote that on April 30th of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
She went on, I have no respect for any man that belittles, lies, cheats, sleeps around, and uses women for his own power and ego. You are that man and have been for years. And as your mother, it pains me and embarrasses me to say that. But it is the sad, sad truth. Dagger heart.
Was she?
Damn.
But was she describing her son there, or was she describing Trump?
See, the nice thing with these guys, they can pluck one away, put one in. They're all kind of the same, right? That's why they're all together.
That's
why
they're all in a
birds
group.
Of a feather.
The
stunning email, according to the Daily Beast, was obtained by the New York Times and published in a report on Friday night. Hegseth's mother also condemned his treatment of Samantha during their bitter divorce, writing, quote, "For you to try to label her as unstable for your own advantage is despicable and abusive. Is there any sense of decency left in you?" No, so he's gaslighting her on top of it. You're crazy. She's hysterical. I said that to you earlier.
Yes, you did.
Tongue in cheek, though. Penelope goes on. "She did not ask for or deserve any of what has come to her by your hand. Neither did Meredith."
Ooh.
Who's Meredith?
First wife.
Apparently that's the first wife. So many wives.
Uh-huh.
Now, speaking with the Times on Friday, Penelope Hegseth, mom, says she had recanted the claims contained in the email and now regrets sending it. Here's the new statement.
Okay.
"It's not true. It's never been true. I know my son. He's a good father, husband." She said the publishing of the contents of the first email was disgusting. Disgusting?
I think the abuse maybe was disgusting. The gaslighting.
Hegseth was accused of rape by a woman he met at a Republican conference in Monterey, California, 2017. He admitted to paying the woman off to protect his hosting job at Fox News, but strenuously denied her claim, saying the encounter was consensual. He was never charged. His second wife filed for divorce after it emerged that he had been having an affair with Fox News executive Jennifer Rauchet, 39. The two have a daughter together and married in 2019 at a Trump golf course. So is that three?
That's three
wives
marriages
and two baby mamas.
All right,
and counting.
So he's almost on a level with Trump.
I mean, he's getting there.
He's getting there.
Oh, but wait, there's more. But wait, there's more. If you call now, Pete Hegseth. Let's see. Faces a new magazine report detailing his alleged alcohol abuse, sexual impropriety, and mismanagement while running two veterans nonprofit groups. Well,
no, put him in charge.
You know, if you can't take some money out of the nonprofit at the strip club. The report published by The New Yorker, and I did look at this, is very long, so I'm reading the CNBC.com review, citing a previously undisclosed whistleblower complaint written in 2015. Says that Hegseth was drunk on repeated occasions while acting as president of the Concerned Veterans of America to the point of needing to be carried out of the organization's events.
Yikes.
Oh, come on, man. Hold your liquor.
Hold your liquor, at least.
At one point, Hegseth had to be restrained while drunk from joining the dancers on the stage of a Louisiana strip club where he had brought his team.
Oh, man.
Are you hiring? What is it? Concerned Veterans of America? I want to party with you, cowboy. I mean, if you can't get up and dance with the strippers, what kind of a club is it? The report also says that Hegseth, who was married at the time, I mean, this guy's always married.
It seems like
or he's out getting rid of one and got another coming. He was married at the time, and other members of his management team sexually pursued the organization's female staffers, whom they divided into two groups, the party girls and the not party girls, the New Yorker's Jane Mayer wrote.
Oh, that sounds like such a healthy workplace.
He was later forced to step down as president of the CVA in 2016, in part due to, quote, concerns about his mismanagement and abuse of alcohol on the job, the magazine said, citing what it called three knowledgeable sources, one of whom contributed to the whistleblower report. I mean, it's what I dance with the strippers on the stage and, you know, pursuing our nonprofit females into party girls. I bet they went after the party girls, right?
Of course.
Yeah. Well, you could maybe convert the non-party girls. Terrible. That's your new Pentagon chief. Hey, folks, thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Harvey K., Professor Emeritus at University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Stick around. Pete Schwabba from Nightlight coming up next. Thanks, Jess.
WGBW and WGBW.FM. John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
On Tuesday's show, we're live from our Oshkosh studio with Dale Anderson of the Military Veterans Museum.
Plus, we'll hang out with Pat Tracy from Discover Oshkosh. Man, I hope we make it on time.
Me too.
Join us.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
James Rundy.
I decided to throw off all my wild and crazy short film ways and make a straight up documentary about my uncle. He was one of the small time dairy farmers across the state that were kind of the backbone and why we got our state's name, America's Dairyland.
It was called The Last Milk. Have you ever milked a cow?
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious, but I'm scared to do it because I'm worried I might like it.
All right. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media radio station.